Welcome to the Visual Storytelling Podcast. My name is Fred Ranger, and I'm so happy that you're joining us today for another inspirational conversation. Today I have a very special guest, a fellow Quebec-based photographer. Her name is Baran Askari, and she's joining us today out of Deux Montagnes, more precisely. First of all, Baran, I want to welcome you to the show. We've been exchanging some messages on Instagram, and I was telling you how inspired I am by your photography. But first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Fred. Thank you for having me. And it's actually great to be here, and thank you so much.
Well, I'm very excited to be diving into some questions because, like I said, I've been very inspired by your story, by the photography that you're publishing over at your website and Instagram and so on. But before we dive into the photographs, why don't you walk us through a bit more on how you started this whole photography journey on your side?
Well, it all started in the year 2020. It was, I think, 1 month or 2 months before the pandemic started that I got hired, and this was my new job. So with the pandemic going on, I was still on probation in my new job, and you know, no one knew what was going on exactly. So I was at the point in my life that I couldn't risk losing my job. So they asked everyone to stay at home and to work from home. But my position was somehow in a way that I couldn't stay at home. My presence was needed. So I suggested them, because I was living in downtown and my new workplace was very, very close. So I asked them that I can actually come to work if you don't mind. And then they said, well, you cannot use the public transportation because of the situation. And I said, okay, so I'll walk. So I said it was close, but every morning it was like 30 minutes walk. And well, I started walking to work, and I think it was one day that I felt like I was seeing some scenes in the street. I was seeing people, I was seeing lights and shadow, and I really felt like I needed a camera. So talking about my emotions and my feelings was not new to me, because I had a blog before, and I used to write in my blog about my feelings and my emotions. But from that time, I felt like the way of expressing myself is going to be changed. So I stopped writing and I got a camera before even knowing what am I going to do with my camera. So I got a camera from Amazon, and I don't know if I'm allowed to mention that, but I got a very not very professional camera, and then I started Googling and learning YouTube about it, and my daily commute to work was a good practice, and that's how it all started.
It's very interesting, because a lot of photographers are telling me on this show that, you know, walking was the reason why they decided to pick up a camera, because might as well, you're seeing all these great things, these stories unfolding in front of your eyes, and you're like, well, I hope I'm going to remember it, but how about capturing it and basically having it forever? So you did start it with street photography, it seemed, but you did evolve to, I would say, a more personal approach to photography. I see a lot of self-portraits in there, some portraits for other people. I even saw something in Vogue. So how did that evolve, you know, from the little, you know, walk to work to being a very successful portrait photographer?
Well, the time that I was doing street photographer, I felt like I will always stay a street photographer. I was not interested in portrait, although I was interested and I was passionate about capturing people in the street. And if you go back to my early street shots, you always see a person or a shadow of a person or a face in my all photos. But portrait was far, far in my head. So by the time that I bought a house and I moved from downtown, I didn't have that opportunity walking to work every day. But I felt like photography was still in me. So there was something missing, that walking and those street daily street shots. I didn't have access to that anymore, but I felt like the drive was still there. So I started taking self-portraits because that's the only thing that I could do on those days. And also I felt like my Sony camera was new to me. My Fuji film was still new to me. So when I was doing street photography, I had a Canon M50, I think, by that time. So when you're like, that's how I learned. You use your camera, you take so many photos and you learn. So because I wanted to just explore more my camera, I started to do self-portraits, and I started to post some of them as like stories on my Instagram, and it just received positive feedback and great feedbacks. And I started posting them, which wasn't the easiest thing, but I felt like this is also challenging myself, you know, pushing myself to the things that I had never done or never thought. And it just got more interesting because I realized that as much as I can show my emotions and my feeling through self-portrait, I can do it with others as well. And that's how it evolved to street photography. Street photography is always has got a special place in my heart. I still, in the morning when I walk a little bit to work, when I go to downtown, I still like wish that I had my cameras with me. I could still like capture a street shots, but I think these days I'm more like about portraits, self-portraits, yeah, or portraits of others.
But would you say that and this is the only portion of gear talk we're going to do, but do you feel that the Fuji X100 helped you bring your camera to more places and be more aware of your surroundings?
Exactly. That's actually the only reason that I bought my Fuji X100V. I was still doing street photography, and my Canon felt like a bit heavy, so I needed a small kind of camera which still the same actually capacity. So I felt like X100V was the best one, and it never disappointed me actually. Even with portraits, I was able to take great portraits with that one, and one of them was actually seen by Fujifilm, and it was posted on their social media, and they loved it.
Nice. Who would have thought that, you know, one day would be like camera brands on social media reposting photographers? But it's great. It's just, it feels like a community out there. And I don't know if you know, but I'm a OG. So we were talking about previously to recording this show, Baran and I were talking about the fact that I own the very first X100, not the F, the V, the whatever, like just the X100. It was probably one of the worst camera at autofocusing and doing all this stuff, but it was the camera that was with me. And the big Nikon gear was staying at home most of the time. And on a trip to Italy, I ended up like having 80% of my shots taken with the X100. So yeah, great little camera. Baran, I want to go back to the photography that you share on social, because there is an element of storytelling. This whole podcast is about visual storytelling. I think you are probably one of my favorite Canadian photographer that use storytelling as the core of your photography. How do you come up with the ideas? Like, do you sit down and you know, in an empty room, and then you just start blasting stuff on paper? Do you do it in the moment with the camera? What's your creative process?
Well, thank you so much for the compliment, Fred. The only thing that I can say is that as soon as I started photography, it was always about story for me. Like, I didn't want to just put out a photo on my social media, or I didn't want to click a photo. I always tried and did my best to put some layers to the stories. So there are times that I feel like different emotions at time, and I feel like I need to have a photo for that. And then I try to come up with ideas, but that's very rare in my work. Usually it's like the moment. I feel something, I just get up, I get my camera, and I try to just quickly think about light, shadow, and everything, and I try to have a composition that the best express what I'm feeling there. And I think maybe, I don't know, but I mean, everyone has got his or her own story in life, but I think maybe my life was like full of stories. I immigrated to Canada in 2016, and it wasn't the best, it wasn't the easiest decision of my life. So there were like ups and downs, and I always really wanted to have a way to have an like something to let my emotions and feelings out. So it's usually like that. I listen to a song, and then the lyrics and the melody just makes me feel in a way that I say, oh my God, I want to have a photo to show how I feel right now. But there are also some shots that I have like a setup, like I think about them. I say, okay, so this is the story, this is the setup. But it's usually instant, like it happens right on the time that I feel something.
That's great. That's great. And by the way, the name of your Instagram account says it all, I think. You know, click when words fail. So I thought that was brilliant, by the way. So this is probably one of the best Instagram handle that you can find out there. And I invite everybody to go see and subscribe to Maran's feed, because it's very telling of how you can leverage storytelling in your photography. You also kind of, you know, go from color to black and white. And I think that there's a lot of listeners that are torn, you know, like, should I go all in black and white? Should I do color? How can I decide? So do you have any few tips? Because I see that you mastered basically the shadow and the tones on in the black and white. And you also have your own color palette. How do you decide between both?
Well, honestly, it depends on the emotion and on the feeling that I want to express. Sometimes you have like deeper and more intense feelings that you want to express, and for those I choose black and white, because black and white doesn't distract, you know, your mind, and just focuses you on the subject and the story and light and shadow. Sometimes the colors are a way of expressing those layers, you know, so many varieties, let's say, in one subject or in one story. Sometimes I have it in mind. I just say, this is a black and white photo, and I set my camera on black and white. I take black and white, and I don't even check how will it look like, because that's a part of a scenario for me. So as I said, it all depends on the story. Sometimes I feel like it's deep, it's intense. Black and white would serve the best. Sometimes I feel like colors come to help. And I used to be a painter when I was in my country for 4 years. I started painting when I was 12 years old, and I don't know how many paintings I still have in my mom's house, but probably having enough to have a 5-6 exhibition. So I'm quite familiar with colors, and colors, actually, I like to play with colors, let's say, and they mean a lot to me. So that's how I decided. I don't know if I answered your question, if I could help.
No, you did, because
yes,
it's not a perfect science. And again, I like the fact that you mentioned that it might be organic. And then you're like, wow, okay, this needs to be black and white. I can feel the intensity. I want this contrast. And I can see that you're using a very contrasty approach to black and white. Some other people like a pale palette and stuff, but this is a statement. You know, this is what you want to say. But color is not easier or more fun or anything like that. It depends on the scene. It depends on the story you're trying to tell. So it's great. Talk to me about Vogue, because I see that on your profile. I'm like, oh my God, what happened there? She's a famous international Vogue photographer. What's up with that?
The Vogue was actually a very interesting story. One of my friends that I actually never met, and he's a part of this community that I have on Instagram. So he told me about Vogue and the fact that they have, like, every week they have kind of submission, and then he actually mentioned one of my photos, and he said that this photo, I think they're gonna accept it. So I just, out of curiosity, let's say, I made a profile there, and I think it was because Vogue, they have every week submission on Mondays. So it's, I don't know if it's a 12-hour submission or 24-hour submission. I think it's a 12-hour. It starts from 12 noon European time, and then it ends 12, I think, night, if I'm not mistaken. So it was still in that time, and I said, okay, so let me submit it. And the process is like that. You submit your photo, and then you wait until to see if it's selected. So if it's selected, it stays in your profile, and if no, it just disappears. So I submitted that photo as, you know, as I said, as a test, just out of curiosity, and it got approved right away, and directly it went to Photo Vogue, Best of Photo Vogue, which is another actually categories, like higher than the usual one, which I never managed to go again after that. It's over a year. And it was very interesting for me. Like, I went through the selections that they had that day, and the fact that I submitted only one photo as a test, and then it went to Best of Photo Vogue, it somehow was interesting to me, because I saw it as a way, like, I'm not going to say validating, but it was very encouraging for me that they do it every week. And well, you know, Vogue is a big name, maybe not in photography, but I really like their selection and the categories that they have. So since then, it became a thing for me. Every week, I think during the week, I think about two photos. I select two photos. I submit them. And as you see, not many have been approved, but there's a good number that have been approved.
It's already, to your point, a testament of the quality of your work. I mean, Vogue, they see a lot of images in a week or in a year even. That's very, very positive. I see that you also share sometimes some of your editing process, or processing process, should I say. Do you use a lot of processing? Do you use your mobile? Because you seem to be using the mobile version of Lightroom and so on. So are you a nomad photographer, or you like to sit down and, you know, glass of wine and just, you know, edit your photos for hours? What's your type of post-processing?
Well, I think in my IG I have over 2,000 photos since the time that I started, and I can say maybe 90% of them, they're edited by mobile.
Okay, wow.
So I usually don't do a lot of editing. I have my Lightroom, my mobile Lightroom, and also Lightroom on my computer. I really like to look at the photos on the big screen and do a lot of post production with Lightroom. But usually, because I know what it is, I know what I want, I know how the light is, so my editing doesn't take longer than 10 minutes. I feel like as much, like, when you put so many layers of technology on a photo, it just takes the essence of the photo. That's what I think. I am not against editing, or I am not against, you know, heavy post-production, but this is just my style, especially in portrait. I think portraits, people with their faces, with their eyes, with their skins, with the lines on their skin, with the sparkles in their eyes, smile. I think every single of the line and the shadow and everything, they have that is a part of the story that I want to reveal. So I don't want to do much really editing, especially on portrait, because I think that's a part of the whole package. So my editing usually is on mobile, unless there is something that I really want to look on the big screen. And yeah. I'm not against heavy editing, but this is just my style. Very little, maybe just a little bit of contrast, blemishes, that's all.
You try to get it right in camera as close as you can, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yes, the original.
Have you ever tried the Fujifilm simulations? That's also something that other camera brands like the Sony have doesn't do, but the Fujifilm has some, well, what they call film-like type of simulations. Did you try them on your camera? Yeah,
and I have. Okay. I have tried them, and I quite actually liked it. I didn't really like go deep into it, but yes, I tried, and I really liked it.
It's fascinating. Have you ever tried to shoot film with film cameras?
No. I'm always like, I have it in my mind to go there somewhere, but I feel like I have still a long way to go before trying
film. But you know, because what? I think your photography would be ideal for the style. You know, like you like a very textured, layered, some grain in there. So I think you would like it. I understand that your photography journey, you're still young in your photography journey, but the world would benefit from seeing what Baran can do on film. That's definitely something.
I really would love to. I would love to try it, but, you know, like, there are things in life that you always want to try, but that decision, that moment that you say, okay, I'm doing it, I think that moment hasn't come to me yet, but who knows, maybe tomorrow, maybe next year, I don't know.
It will come, and if you need a film camera, you can come see me, I'll lend you one with great pleasure.
Sure, sure. I will get your X100.
Yes, that's nice. The price of film, though, it's a bit of a downer. The prices are so high right now. Everything is so high right now. So, but yeah. I want to go back to something you said in an interview in the Montreal Guardian. I thought it was beautiful. You said the streets are not only a means of travel, they are an opportunity to pause, to breathe, to look around, to laugh, to cry, to fall in love, to live, and then just keep moving. That's something very powerful. That's something very unique. I feel that you are using street photography and travel and your photography as a whole to basically put yourself into an immersive state, right? So some photographers are just capturing the moment and they're trying to get it as sharp as they can and as exact as they saw it. I feel you're more on the other side where you want to, it's like therapy, right? At the end of the day, for you, photography. I know it is for me. How is it for you? Because what you said feels a lot like how I see photography too.
It is, yes. And yes, exactly. So the time that I was doing street photography, there were so many things going on, like in the world and also in my personal life. So street meant a lot to me, especially after I started posting photos every day. So it was a kind of therapy for me and about what was going on in my life. I was going through a very, very hard time. And every day, I don't know if you remember that time or no, but I think for 5-6 months when I was doing that, I posted 3 photos every day, wow, nonstop, even Saturday, even Sunday. And I called them trio. So each trio has a story. So like in the morning, if you ask me now, I don't know how it happened, but it just happened. So every morning when I stepped in the street, I could see a story happening in the street. Streets were empty, but there were people at home following my account just because my account was like a window to them. You know, they had to stay home, but I had to go walk through downtown and see like people in the street. So life was still going on, actually. We were so scared, but life was going on. So my trios, every day I had a theme, and then the trio, I tried to put them like in a story with a beginning, like the story developed, and then the end. And I think it's like exactly, the trio is a reflection of the street. You just go to the street, you start from somewhere, you walk, and then you reach to your destination. And it's somehow like every day, I think life is like that. Streets, or even in portraits, I see that. It's a time to just pause, to reflect, to see that emotion. How is it? How other people feel in that moment, and then you just move on and
go. What you're saying is so true, and something that happened to me very recently. Somebody bought a print that I shot in New York, a street photography shot. It was a beautiful woman in a window, and it was just like a timeless type of image. Yeah, it's called The Girl in the Window. So I don't know if you saw it. And yes. So I start reading the email, and the person who ordered the print is actually the mother of the person in the window.
And
I'm like, oh my God, okay. And then she's like, you know what? I want to give that image to the grandparents of the girl in the window. And I know they're going to cry because they saw it. I showed it to them on my phone, and they started crying. It was so beautiful. And then the daughter also found it was beautiful. So I'm like, oh my, okay, so this was just a shot on the street. I was capturing something that lasted literally a fraction of a second. As you know, things go by very fast. But I captured that, and then it's becoming a gift. It's becoming something that people will look at for hopefully years and years. And it was just a beautiful scene. So what you're saying is so true. You never know when you're going to inspire somebody, when you're going to make somebody cry, somebody laugh, somebody feel something. And I think to your point, photography is not about the gear or the settings and so on. Photography is about making people feel something. Exactly. And I think you were so right in terms of timing, because we were all stuck at home. We were seeing our four walls and our kids, and we love our kids, but sometimes we're like, oh my God, I'm going to go crazy. And then you've got, you know, Taran is on the street giving us a glimpse of, hey, there's still life, there's still stuff happening, and this is what's unfolding. So I thought it was a nice connection with that very recent story that happened to me. And I feel that we have a lot of similarities in the way we see photography as not just an art form, but literally therapy and a way to connect people together. So it's great to hear that.
It's amazing, because that has been always my goal, to create and also to make a photograph that resonates with people, like people connect. But the stories that happen during this journey, sometimes I'm just so impressed, I'm in awe, and it has brought tears to my eyes. It has brought me laughter. It has brought me joy. Like your goal is something, but you never expect actually those stories. Yeah. Like the story that you shared about that woman, and I think that is the most amazing. That is the most amazing thing that might happen to an artist.
When you
see that your art is going, I don't know, beyond the borders, you never know how you touch people's hearts.
Precisely. And I don't know if you're the same as me, but when you feel a creative rut, or, you know, you're in a darker mood, and yeah, you know, us artists, we tend to go fast on that darker side sometimes, and then you get something like that happens, or you get somebody like your photo gets published in Vogue, like you're like, oh my God, okay, no, I need to keep doing this is good, it's making people feel some emotion, again, not necessarily all positive, but making people feel something. And we're human beings, we're designed to feel stuff, so if we can help people go through difficult times, happy times, that's the definition of art, again, according to me. So I think you're a bit the same on that front. Who, speaking of being inspired and feeling stuff, who inspires you? Are you somebody who consume a lot of like photography books, or are you just going on Instagram? Like, what's your source of inspiration? And maybe it's not even about photography where you draw your inspiration.
Well, who inspires me, or let's say what inspires me? There's so many answers for that. There is a small thing that inspires me, a light, a shadow, an angle. But most of the time, talking to people and seeing them, how they react to different things that happen to their life, like their emotion, how they're going through difficulties, how they're going through happy moments. Usually people's emotion and people's sentiment inspire me a lot. But I also get a lot of inspiration from songs. I'm not a musician. I don't know much about music, but there are sometimes songs that may like occupies my mind for a day, for two, the lyrics. And then I try to just, you know, show it with that song or with that line, maybe with that word. Sometimes it's a book, sometimes as I said, like weather, even sometimes weather inspires me. So it's a lot of thing. I'm a sensitive person. I'm a very sensitive person, very emotional person. And I always see things. I try to see things differently. I try to see the depth of people or things that are happening around me. So I cannot really name one person or one thing. It's just that it's life, actually. It's life and it's stories that happen every day.
Wow, that's a very powerful way to talk about inspiration. and as it should, because this is, you know, you're not dependent on anyone or on anything. You draw inspiration from day-to-day life, and
exactly.
That's an infinite source of inspiration.
Exactly. And even there was one of my self-portrait that was exhibited in Milan, and the story of that, even sometimes when I told the story of that photo, sometimes people were like in shock, and they told me, how were you able to get up and take photo on such situation? I think I have a green wall self portrait with my cat, which was exhibited in Milan in September.
Yeah, and I saw that one. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. And actually, that is the morning after my mom passed away. The day before, I was having like a video call with my mom. My mom was fighting with cancer for over a year, and I couldn't travel back to my country, to Iran, because of the photos that I took during the protest of women life freedom. And on that time when the movement was going on, I attended in the protest every week, and I took so many photos, and going back to Iran was too risky for me, so I couldn't actually travel to be with my mom. So it was a really like I was going through very, very tough and dark time, and I was having a video call with my mom when she passed away. So the morning after, I just woke up with this huge void in me, with that sorrow, and like I didn't know what to do really. I had no family here. Like I needed to do my mourning. I had to do something, and all I could do was just setting up my camera and taking a photo. Like I couldn't even leave the bed, and that's why the photo is in the bed, because I was paralyzed. And then my cat came over. She's my companion for over 14 years. So she came to me, I took that photo, and it was loved and liked by so many people. So sometimes when I say this story, they say, how did you get up and to put your tripod? I said, like, because it's therapy, because photography is my therapy. That's what I do. I couldn't be with friends or family, but my camera was there. So that's how some of the shots happened. I get the inspiration from sorrow, from joy, from whatever is happening in my life.
Well, you definitely got me there. I was almost crying behind the mic. I went on mute just for people listening to this one. I'm also, as you can tell, a very emotional person. So, wow, this is probably one of the most powerful story shared on this podcast. But let's go back to our happy place about photography. Your use of blurriness. That's also an element of storytelling that you use often. I like how on your site you basically sum it up by saying more emotion, less perfection. But is this something you learn along the way that you said, you know what, I'm going to use that as a way to convey this type of emotion? How does this genre for you became a thing? Because again, I see it, of course, the portraits you take are sharp and they're all good. But when you go to a bit of a more an artistic way, I like your use of blurriness. So how do you do it and how do you decide on how you're going to do it?
I do it very intentionally. It's just because what I try to convey is that they're still in people. There's still some angles and there's still some stories that you can never understand by a photo, even by living with that person or even by knowing that person. So by blurs, I want to convey that there are still untold stories about this photo. There are still layers. There's still, this photo is beyond this that you can see. For my close-up portrait, I place a small mirror in front of me, very, very small mirror. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then I hold my camera. I don't use tripod that much. I really like to hold my camera. And then I hold my camera and playing with the f-point and the blur happened. But the blur are very strong, as you know, maybe you know better, but the blurs become very strong when you are so close to the mirror when you are taking a self-portrait. And I'm using an 85mm lens.
Oh, so it's easy to...
It's very easy. And also it's very tricky because you cannot really get, you know, it's not very easy. It usually takes a while to just focus and then playing with the blur and everything. But yes, I'm very impressed that actually you noticed that. You noticed that I play with the blurs.
Well, because for me, again, this whole show and I'm driven by visual storytelling. I think it's a very powerful way of, I think I said powerful 17 times in this podcast. I think I'm going to sum up our conversation as a powerful conversation, yet very open. I like it. But yeah, no, your use of blurriness, I not enough people do it. And because there's such a perfection aspect to Instagram and social media, people like the quote unquote the banger shots, you know, like the ones that are gonna be like that sunset. And I'm guilty of posting sometimes some photos like that because sometimes it's a nice sunset and I want to capture it and share with my community. But when done right, I think there's so much interesting aspect to using blurriness, and it's not something that's very trendy right now. So I like when people do it and do it like you do it right, because it opens up a different set of references for storytelling. It's just well executed.
Thank you.
So if you were to give a couple tips to, I know, again, you're fairly new to your whole photography career journey, but there, I'm sure there's, you know, young women and men that are looking up to you and they're like, wow, this is, if I can be half as good as what Baran is doing, what would you recommend to them if they're just starting up? And for you, it's not that long ago, so you remember vividly. What would be some of the tips you would give people on that front?
Well, as you said, I'm quite young in photography. I still I see a long way for myself to go and to experience and to explore. But this is my experience, and this is something that I'm actually proud of myself for doing that. And that is, I never let fear stop me from taking more photos or from posting my photos on Instagram, because Instagram and also social medias are very tricky. You keep posting stuff that people like, and then at some point you feel like, oh my God, you haven't improved. It's very tricky. So what I can say is that what I did was that I never trusted actually the number of likes or the number of likes or shares that I received. I just knew that I have a path, I have a long way to go. And sometimes I say this to my friend, I say, you're not going to believe that, but in the last 4 years, 3 years, well, it's coming 4 years, there was not even a single day that I didn't take any photo.
Wow.
Like every day I take a photo. I used to carry my camera all the time with myself. Not anymore now, but I have my phone. So I think that's the best way to learn. Like to, you don't need to be in a studio. You don't need to have expensive lighting. You don't need to have a model. It's just explore yourself, explore. Your life is worth being captured, I think, your surrounding and everything that is happening. So don't be afraid of taking so many photos. It's not like film. It's not expensive.
Yes.
You take photo and you're the best, I think, you're the best critic to yourself. You see your photos, you can see your growth, and don't fall for social media traps. It's not all the time correct, and it's not all the time taking you to that place that you want.
Thank you for saying, and those are very insightful recommendation, because let's never forget, this is a quote unquote free product that you're using, so you are the product, and it is an advertising platform, so the algorithm will always favor whatever people are liking and sharing and commenting on. And as we know, it might not be the most artistic crowd that is on Instagram, people. And no offense to anybody on Instagram. I'm on Instagram. You're on Instagram. You've got a pretty healthy community out there. And the reason why we're talking today is because of Instagram. So I do see a lot of benefits. But to your point, I see a lot of traps we call it in French, des pièges, that we need to avoid, because this is easily a platform that you can keep feeding, but it's like a beast, right? That there's no ending, and there's an algorithm that's going to push you towards maybe not what you feel, but what they feel should be shown to people.
Exactly. And not everyone owns, you know, a website. And I think social medias could also be used as a portfolio. But I keep, like, when I hear this from some of my friends on Instagram, like they send me a photo and they ask, like, what do you think about this photo? They ask my idea, and then they say, oh, yeah, I know it's a good photo, but it's not Instagrammable. Or it's not Instagram good. And that really breaks my heart when they say that, because it's a nice photo, but they are thinking about the judgment that they will receive from people, and that stops them from posting it. So maybe there is a one or two, I don't know, really good photographers out there that they can comment, and she can actually, you know, grow and improve, but she doesn't post it because she's afraid, or he's afraid, that it will not receive likes or anything. And you know, sometimes when you don't have a website, you don't post it, it just gets archived and be forgotten. And that's very sad.
In the black hole of good photos on a hard drive in some house somewhere in the world.
It's a pity. It's really a pity.
Absolutely. So speaking of which, where can people find more of your work? Where can people see your work?
Well, my works are mainly on Instagram.
Yeah.
I have a website, but honestly, I didn't have much time in the last year to work on it, but I have it is in my plan for the new year to just put my works in different categories there.
Yes.
But usually my photos are mostly on Instagram, and also my Vogue photos on my Vogue portfolio.
Nice.
Which, if they look for in Vogue, there's a section that you can search photographers. If they search my name, there are all my Vogue selected photos there.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And I will put the links in the show notes so you can easily find Baran's work. Baran, it's been such a great conversation today. Like I said, we laughed, we cried, a bit like when you walk on the street. We laughed, we cried, we got inspired, went into deep places. So thank you. Thank you for your generosity. Thank you for sharing your story, for being inspirational for people who are listening to this podcast. So I don't know what else to say. Big thank you for your participation.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Fred, for inviting me and for having me on this show. It was such a pleasure, my pleasure to be your guest. And I can't wait to listen to your future episodes.
Cool stuff. And since we're in Montreal, maybe we connect at some point and we go out on the street. I've been Fred Ranger, so thank you so much for listening to this episode. I invite you, if you like what you're hearing, to give a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all these great platforms. It helps to spread the word. And also, if you know people who might be interested in listening to our conversation, there's a back catalog of as inspirational episodes down there that you can listen to. So again, thank you, Baran, and I wish every single one of you a happy holiday period. Cheers.